Cleveland's morning news on the only station that matters, WBAL.com.
Phil Vanko along with Brian Niemann as we continue a special hour of Maryland's morning news considering health care reform, Obamacare if you will, and its implications. Dr. Peter Bielenson is the former Baltimore City Health Commissioner. He was also the top health officer in Howard County, and now he has taken on a new job trying to grab this many-headed hydra and make it work. He joins us on the WBAL Newsline this morning. Morning, Dr. Bielenson.
Good morning.
We just spent a half an hour with Congressman Andy Harris being told why this won't work. Why will it?
Well, I think it does several things that help improve the healthcare system, although I'll be the first to say that it certainly is not at all close to perfect. It's probably the best that could have been made out of the compromises that went on in Washington back 3 years ago. But it does two major things. Number one, it does major insurance reform in terms of getting rid of pre-existing condition exclusions, which is a huge deal for people who are currently have a chronic disease and want to apply for individual or even small group insurance. It's virtually impossible to get anything in an affordable manner, and oftentimes you can't even get covered. So that's done away with the bill. And lifetime caps and annual caps are also done away with, which makes a difference, again, for many people, because the single leading cause of personal bankruptcy in the United States is health care costs. And the vast majority of those who go bankrupt for health care costs are insured, not uninsured, but insured. And so that's because they've blown through their caps. So insurance reform is number one as a tremendous benefit. And number two, it increases access to care by allowing three different things to happen. Number one, expanding Medicaid coverage for the low-income folks, particularly those who don't have dependent children who right now are treated quite differently than those who do have dependent children in that they are not eligible for Medicaid, but they will be under the bill. Second, it allows kids to stay on their parents' plans until age 26. And third, in a very convoluted way, using the exchange, which is the travelocity of health care, and mandates to force people into the exchange, it allows for more affordable coverage for some who couldn't otherwise afford it. So those are the two major things, increase in access to care, and secondly, insurance reform.
We've also heard that an increase in premiums, as we've been hearing for the last couple of weeks from Blue Cross at Blue Shield, an increase in premiums is all but a given.
It depends on. For some people, it will be. Certainly for younger people, because they'll be sort of cross-subsidizing older people, that's likely to be the case. For those who had pre-existing conditions, clearly they will have lower premiums and actually be able to get insurance in many cases. And third, those who are uninsured because it was unaffordable will find that the cost of health coverage is more affordable under the bill. So the majority of people will see either the ability to get insurance because it's more affordable or will find more affordable premiums. But indeed, some will find it more expensive.
All right. So explain to me this then. If you had a 30-year-old who didn't have a job or his company didn't offer health insurance and he had to get an individual policy through,
yep,
say, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and now Blue Cross, Blue Shield is saying, well, we're going to have to raise rates 25%. How is that going to make it more affordable for them? How is this law make it more affordable?
Well, since they weren't getting insurance anyway, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, to be honest with you. They're going to either have the individual mandate, which was the tax penalty that would accrue if you don't have health coverage, which admittedly is very low. So the incentive is for that young person who would be maybe getting a $3,000 or $4,000 a year premium to choose to not pay that and instead get the tax penalty and take a chance on remaining healthy.
Right.
And
but
that's certainly a possibility.
But if he wants insurance and beforehand he's like, yeah, it's too expensive for me now, if the rates are going up because of this, then how is it more affordable for him? That's what I'm trying to wrap my head around.
Comprehensive coverage, excuse me. Comprehensive coverage may be more expensive than currently, but he couldn't afford it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be what's called the bronze level, or sort of catastrophic coverage that is very inexpensive, that has a high deductible. In other words, he may have to cover himself for the first $2,500 to $5,000, but it is very low cost in terms of covering you above that. And that's pretty much what's been available now.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Bielenson about what's right about health care reform. We'll continue that conversation coming up.
Maryland's morning news on the only station that matters, WBAL.com.
9:47 on Maryland's morning news. This is Brian Niemann along with Bill Vanko. We're talking about health care and Obamacare. Dr. Peter Bielenson is on the line. Doctor, I have heard from reporters, healthcare reporters, and as well as politicians, both for and against this bill, that Maryland is actually in a better position than just about everybody else when it comes to setting up these exchanges. In fact, Maryland is better off than the federal exchange and may even be hampered right now by the federal government on this. Do you agree with that assessment from that reporting that I've heard?
I think I don't agree with the latter point, but I think that the former is correct. Maryland has been quite in the forefront of health care reform for many years. The governor and the health secretary, Josh Sharfstein, have been extremely supportive of Obamacare. And because of that, the exchange is operating really, really well. Becca Pierce, who runs the exchange, is pretty much in the front of the country in terms of that. And then secondly, so we're very much on board. The exchange will be up and running on October 1st. For those who don't know, the exchange is literally the Travelocity of health coverage for the uninsured. You go on to this exchange, the Travelocity, type in your, or either are assisted to do it or do it yourself.
All right,
online, and you, what pops up is the options for you as if you were traveling to another city.
All right, but Travelocity only works if there are multiple different airlines where I can choose from, multiple
Correct.
Different hotels where I can choose from.
Correct.
How many different insurance companies will be on these exchanges?
There are at least six, including, we're running, what my position is the CEO of Evergreen Health Co-op. It's a nonprofit health insurance company enabled by the Obamacare to compete with the other big insurers. So I know for a fact that because the rates have been filed already with the insurance administration, that Blue Cross, CareFirst will be on, United will be on, Coventry will be on, Aetna, Kaiser, and Evergreen. So it's actually a fairly robust exchange.
If you are an existing healthcare customer, if you are a guy who goes to work 9 to 5 every day, your employer gives you healthcare coverage, you have it, you've always had it, what do you have to look forward to in this other than potentially higher premiums?
Probably nothing. You probably will not get higher premiums because you'd have for example, if you work for Company X with 2,000 employees, you're not going to see any difference. The only thing that will be beneficial will be that if you have a chronic condition and want to go off on your own, for example, and start a small business, and currently you would not be able to get insurance for yourself or you'd be unaffordable, you would be able to get affordable insurance. So it's actually good for the economy in many ways. It keeps people from being static in their jobs if they want to go off into a small business or into an entrepreneurial situation. But if you aren't a part of a group plan right now, basically, it doesn't change anything.
You don't think they'll be raised? I mean, they raise rates every year anyway.
Well, they certainly do. But again, you're in a group, and your risk pool is significantly larger than a small business, and so it shouldn't change much, if at all.
Well, what is the penalty for a company if they don't offer insurance and they have more than 50 employees?
The penalty for a company that does not offer insurance that is more than, I think, 100 employees. I think there's a 50 to 100 is a gap there, but
Okay. Whatever,
50 or 100 or more. If anybody goes into the exchange and gets a subsidy from the feds to get more affordable coverage, that company is penalized. I believe it's about $2,000 per employee. So it is incentivizing, or disincentivizing companies from dropping coverage. It's encouraging companies to provide coverage. I will jump your question here.
Yeah, okay. You know what's coming,
is,
right?
Yeah. let me say that the way that our country has set up the healthcare system makes no sense.
Yes.
We are unique in the world in having businesses and employers be responsible for health coverage. That is makes absolutely no sense. It started in the 1940s in the wage price controls of World War II, as the only way to negotiate was not over wage but over benefits. Mm-hmm. And that's where employers started picking up the coverage. I know you guys don't believe this, but I'm very much for a single payer system, a Medicare system for everyone. There are problems with that, but there are many more benefits. And one of the benefits is it takes the whole thing off the backs of the employers. It makes no sense to have an employer-based system.
Well, I'll ask you this, and I asked Andy Harris this, because there is this theory, this conspiracy theory, or maybe it's reality, who knows, that the whole thing was set up to basically not do as well as it should, so it could fail and they could say, hey, we need a single-payer system. Do you think there's any truth to that at all?
I wish there were, but I'm positive that there isn't. This is actually, again, I'll take a jump here. This is the best example of why we need public financing of campaigns. I know it's antithetical to you, but The reason this bill was such a mishmash of kind of compromise was because big insurance, big docs, big healthcare, big pharma all were getting their little piece of the big piece of the pie, and that's why it's so complicated. So I would argue that the conspiracy theory about this being set up to fail and become a single payer is actually not true. It's actually the opposite in many ways.
This may be slightly off topic, and I'm not sure it is, but we were just handed something this morning from one of the local hospitals, which has notified its employees that starting soon, if they have a spouse who has the option of getting insurance at work and doesn't, they will have to pay a working spouse surcharge. Is that the way of the world? Is that what we're headed for these days?
I think that may be the case. It's not related to healthcare reform. I think that's a way of cost savings from employers. Again, getting back to the point, which I think we may actually agree on, and that is that having this being an employer-based healthcare system makes no sense.
All right, Dr. Peter Bjarnason, good to talk to you. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.